Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out. It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to Continued Success. Another one of your favorite podcasts on the Good Fight podcast family. I am Phillies writer Justin Clue, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin. Are you ready for today's episode?
We have such a fun slate of topics to talk about today. Today's discussion will stay on largely the actions of Major League Baseball. I didn't want to use this quote too soon, but I feel like I have to. It's probably the money quote of the week for me, and it's I read it on your own Jeff Passan's Yahoo Sports article on one of the issues we're going to talk about. He said, among racist tweets, ridiculous remarks from announcers, and now this, MLB has unloaded half a pistol into its foot this year.
That was a good one.
Yeah. And it's not wrong. And yeah, this week was a week where it's not that the conclusion that you wind up drawing was any different than you would expect. It was just sort of a reminder that that's there. And to me, that was the broad, you backed away from these issues enough, you got to that broad conclusion that any corporation, anything you like, whether it's baseball or anything outside of baseball, there is more than likely a coven of probably old men at the top of it who have monetized how you feel about it, who have turned everything you like about it can be peeled back and revealed to be just another way that makes them money. And at the end of the day, that's the only thing that's really dictating their actions. And, you know, we all know that. You don't get any extra points for being like, oh, is that a surprise to you that MLB does this? Like, no, I mean, we get it. You feel like you were the only person in your eighth grade class who understood the Matrix. Like, that's fine. But it's not fun to be cynical. So you don't think about that stuff a lot of the time. But this week, I feel like that's where I landed. Like, oh, yeah, right. You know, there's all this stuff we love about baseball, but at the end of the day, the people at the head of it, you know, it's a corporation and they're going to run it like one. And there's some facelessness and some heartlessness and some ignorance to that goes unchecked for the large part. So that is what we will be discussing today, Liz. Well, not that specifically, but the aspects that fed into that idea. I don't know. How did you feel? We had to hold, since we record on Fridays now, we had to hold on to our feelings on all of the news out of Major League Baseball this week for the entire week. So did you manage to hold on to your emotions for that long?
I mean, yeah. I mean, because they're always sort of simmering underneath the surface.
Sure.
Barely there. I mean, you can't be a baseball fan. You can't be a serious baseball fan and not, you know, you sort of have to have two minds about it. You have to push it aside most of the time. You know, the stuff that you don't like, because you're not going to like every single thing, you know, an organization or whatever does. So you push all that stuff to the side and focus on, you know, I guess what they want you to focus on, but you focus on the point of it, which is the baseball. But in the off season, there is no actual baseball being played. So our anger is all we have. Excuse me. Our anger is all we have of baseball. So, you know, beyond the rumors that never stop. So, you know, it's not hard to find it. At all. I can go from being happy about, you know, baseball for 1 second and then being reminded like, oh, they don't really like, you know, teams don't want to hire, you know, women for whatever reason. They don't think they can do the same things that men do in, you know, baseball operations or on field. You know, they, you know, the Cleveland Indians, I believe, had a job posting that had, you know, preferred to their candidates have played baseball after high school. Now, the only people who can really do that are men. Women, most likely, if they play baseball in high, if they play any kind of bat and ball sport, even in high school, it's softball. And after high school, there's zero chance of them doing that. And so they're pretty much just saying, we prefer we prefer a dude. We prefer a dude. You know, I saw that tweet and it took me no time to be like, oh, baseball doesn't want me. Baseball doesn't want me. They don't like me. They don't want anyone like me working at a front office because they don't think, you know, that we're capable.
And
so, yeah, it's always there.
It brings up the larger argument of like where women are in that regard. Like, why aren't there? Why isn't there an opportunity for women to play baseball after high school? And you know, and that's what I'm sure that's what any Cleveland would say, or what any of their supporters would say. People on the other side of the debate, like, well, what should they like? Oh, of course they want, but like, yeah, but it doesn't like you said, it took you 2 seconds to read into what that qualification really meant, and that was that was just another reason to feel cynical about it, because baseball is still very not inclusive. It does not welcome all of its fans in, and it doesn't really understand itself yet and how it does that. So it's a problematically run organization, and no week was that more evident than this week, which we'll get started here with one of the things that dominated the news until the election at the center of this story took place, and now people are kind of done talking about it. But we wanted to back up and give you a little context. Obviously, you're probably aware of the story that came out after it became clear that Major League Baseball had donated $5,000 to the campaign of Mississippi Senator Cindy Hyde Smith. We wanted to give you a little background. You might know some of this. You might know part of this. I mean, some of this is for our own benefit, but in just to set the table as accurately as we can, we wanted to back up and give you a little background on this particular issue, because this is one of those things where you don't really have to editorialize or offer too much conjecture. You can kind of just say what the things are, and the problem presents itself. So in the case of Cindy Hyde Smith, she's a junior Republican senator from the state of Mississippi. She's made her money cattle ranching. And she actually ran and won her Senate seat in 1999 as a Democrat, then switched parties in 2010, citing her conservative views.
She was never actually a Democrat.
Oh my God. No, that's her website said she was cited her as a lifelong conservative, which is, you know, the accurate way to say that, but there's a reason. That's like putting the Band-Aid over the part of her life where she was, you know, running as a Democrat, because these days that's like an unforgivable offense, you know, one party to the other. So she was the first woman elected to the Mississippi Agricultural Commissioner position in Mississippi.
Congratulations to her.
She is the first woman to represent Mississippi in Congress. On April 2nd of this past year.
Oh, Mississippi. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She is the first woman you pick. All right.
Progress.
Question mark.
On April 2nd, 2018, this past year, Mississippi Senator Thad Cochran stepped down due to health concerns, and Cindy Hyde Smith was named as his replacement by Governor Phil Bryant. The White House back in March told Governor Bryant they actually didn't support his pick of Cindy Hyde Smith because they didn't think she could win the election, the midterms we just had in early November, which we now know she did. But at first, they did not support that pick. Of course, they wound up supporting her. Donald Trump made appearances with her for her campaign. She actually called her bus the MAGA Mobile, and I believe it had an image of her with President Donald Trump on the side of it. So obviously they came around, but they felt like they didn't want to support her because she had been a Democrat. That was like so much of an offense. They thought she can't possibly win. Even though she aligned perfectly with everything the White House wanted to accomplish, she intended to protect Trump's tax cuts. She supports his immigration plan. She wants to fully repeal Obamacare. She wants to protect the Second Amendment. She wants to support the right to life of the unborn. All, you know, checks all the boxes that a conservative in America checks right now. The reason we know her name is because we live in an era where you know more names of more political offices than you probably ever thought you would, even just like 3 years ago. But we
Well, because most of them open their mouths and say stupid things.
Correct. Yeah.
They open their mouths and say stupid things, and then everyone knows about it.
Yes. And that is exactly what happened. The reason we know her name is because in the special election, She and the Democrat she was running against, Mark Espy, both received 41% of the vote. You need at least 50% of the vote to win, so they were moved to a runoff election following the special elections. And during that time, video surfaced that started of her, first of all, what it ended with Hyde-Smith winning in what an NPR reporter called the closest Mississippi Senate race in 30 years. So this was, as most, you know, as we do in this country now, there's a lot of scrutiny on races like this that that you probably, again, wouldn't have thought about a long time or not too long ago. And this was sort of like our race of the week couple weeks or so. So the trouble for Cindy Hyde-Smith, quote unquote trouble, started when video surfaced of her at an event talking about a local rancher who was one of her supporters. And she said, quote, "If he invited me to a public hanging, I'd be in the front row." Now she was able to sort of like, you know, this was the only scandal on her plate at this point. So she was able to be like, oh, I, you know, she played it off as if it was like a hyperbolic statement. She was just trying to say how much regard she had for this person. But obviously the racism entrenched in just this, if we limit it to Mississippi, the culture of that state, there's some obvious connotations to that are very clear, and were very clear to a lot of people. They were very clear to Mark Espy, the Democrat running against her, who is black, who made a comment in response to her saying that, and you know, she tried to talk her way out of it. But the person who made that video then investigated a little further and found another video of her talking to students at Mississippi State University and saying, quote, "There's a lot of liberal folks in those other schools who maybe we don't want to vote. Maybe we want to make it just a little more difficult. And I think that's a great idea." Her campaign responded by saying that that remark was a joke. So then, then the wheels really started spinning. On November 18th, a story published by the Philadelphia Inquirer stated that Hyde-Smith had once tried to get a state highway in Mississippi renamed to honor Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederate States of America during the Civil War, but she couldn't get the legislation to pass. On November 23rd, Ashton Pittman of the Jackson Free Press in Mississippi published an article that said the following, that dug into Cindy Hyde-Smith's past and said the following. I'm just going to read this word for word. Quote, "U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith attended and graduated from a segregation academy that was set up so that white parents could avoid having to send their children to schools with black students," a yearbook reveals. A group photo in the 1975 edition of The Rebel, the Lawrence County Academy yearbook, illustrates the point. High school cheerleaders smile at the camera as they lie on the ground in front of their pom-poms, fists supporting their heads. In the center, the mascot, dressed in what appears to be an outfit designed to mimic that of a Confederate general, offers a salute as she holds up a large Confederate flag. Third from the right on the ground is a sophomore girl with short hair, identified in the caption as Cindy Hyde. So that I've also read that that mascot is supposed to be a Confederate general. His name is Captain Reb. And a segregation academy refers to a private school that opened typically in the South that after the Supreme Court's desegregation of public schools was passed in 1969, these schools were opened as a way for parents to send their children to still send their schools to schools without black students. And the Jackson Free Press went on to say, quote, "It is no coincidence that the academy Hyde-Smith attended opened the very year after the highest court's ultimatum, as did others around the state." Then on November 26th, CNN published a story reporting that Hyde-Smith in 2007 voted for a resolution that was meant to celebrate a Confederate soldier for his efforts to, quote, defend his homeland during the Civil War, which the resolution refers to as the War Between the States. The same.
Sure.
The same.
That's still a thing. This is all still a thing in this world, which is the problem here. But anyway, continue.
This is the last part is the that same report showed that in 2014, she had posted a picture of herself on her Facebook page, wearing a Confederate hat and holding a rifle with the caption, quote, "Mississippi history at its best." So we told you all that so we could tell you this.
Is there any actual best part of Mississippi history?
Nothing off the top of my head, but I mean, this is, you know, God. Yeah. Well, the point is that this is the kind of, this is the politician. This is how it became public that she is, which is clearly a product of a very racist culture in the state of Mississippi, even in 2018, dealing with issues like this. So, despite all this, independent journalist, and I'm sorry, do you know how to pronounce his name? Independent journalist Judd Legum?
Yeah, I'll just say Legum. Okay. Is what I like, a bean.
Yes. He tweeted out that the Office of the Commissioner of Major League Baseball's Political Action Committee, which we all know as PACS, donated $5,000 to Hyde Smith's campaign. The donation is dated as having been made on November 23rd, long after all of this information about Hyde Smith was widely available.
Yeah. And to be fair, I want to say that this started with the majority owner of the Giants, Charles Johnson,
yes,
who also made a donation. He has a history of making political donations to far right conservative groups that just barely have the sheen of respectability over them.
Yep.
And so he made a donation, asked for it back the day before the election, finally.
He made a $2,700 donation, which I believe was the legal maximum he could give. And the Giants, in response to that, released a statement that pretty much said, like, look, we have 30 owners, part owners, then they all have different political beliefs, or some of them.
And look at all the great stuff that we do as an organization.
Right.
We want you to think about that when you think of us, not one of our racist owners.
Right.
Which is impossible. Good luck.
So an MLB spokesperson says in response, once this becomes common knowledge and people are righteously outraged at the fact that Major League Baseball would contribute to such a politician's campaign. An MLB spokesperson says about the $5,000 donation that they made to Cindy Hyde Smith, the contribution was made in connection with an event that MLB lobbyists were asked to attend. MLB has requested that the contribution be returned. We won't know, and this is now me talking, quote, his husband, we won't know if she returned it until December 27th. When the FEC filings are due following her election, which was, I was going to ask that. And then I found the answer. They're like, how will we ever know if they got their contribution back? And
at this point, I mean, and I'll be honest, at this point, it doesn't matter. Right. She won. She's in office. Whether that money might have helped, it might not have. It doesn't really matter. That's not even really the point of the donations.
Right. And it was well, we can just start with this issue because it opened the door to another issue that because the Office of the Commissioner of Baseball's of Major League Baseball's PAC does in fact and has in fact donated to many campaigns of politicians, and they have been of both political parties. They've donated a lot to Chuck Schumer at one point. Early on in its existence, which isn't a defense. It's just more. Pointing out that this system that MLB has, in which they contribute to politicians that align with their interests, is operated very blindly. Because if they're still contributing to someone whose interests line up with theirs in one, like in this one aspect, which is, you know, anti-union, then they're ignoring the fact that they're being that a politician can be so outwardly racist and hateful and make such comments like this. That, you know, especially with baseball's very, you know, still pretty recent history of segregation, that you ignore that you miss all that. You just kind of blindly have a lobbyist contribute $5,000 to her campaign without thinking about anything that she's done, which, again, was widely available for baseball to take note of before it made before it made its contribution. So all that being said, yes, the initial issue of donating the $5,000 to a campaign, you're right, it doesn't matter. It says that they did that alone for whatever reason is such bad optics, is such bad for every reason. I mean, think about if you are a black player in Major League Baseball, of which there are many, and then you see the league you're playing in make a donation to a woman like that for whatever reason, even if they ask for it back, even if they get it back. The fact that it occurred, even for whatever reason, is enough to just make you, it's just hopeless. It just makes you feel hopeless. Like, how can this league that I'm a part of that represents, you know, me to an extent. I mean, and that goes for everyone. Everyone who doesn't want to be, everyone who wants to like baseball, but not be associated with a politician with racist leanings. I mean, it just ruins it for you.
Yeah. I mean, I want to be clear about one thing. Every corporation or company that you like, love, hate, use, know of, does this. Procter & Gamble has a PAC. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Kraft Foods or whatever enormous, you know, multinational conglomerate owns them. Everyone has a PAC. The NFL has a PAC. Every big company has a PAC because it's all like a weird engine to give money. It's like politicians have really figured out how to make money in a lot of ways, because this is like printing money. Because as long as they get it on you know, some kind of committee, they're going to have companies giving them money to make sure that they vote favorably. What MLB does is the same thing that the NFL does. It's the same thing that Procter & Gamble does, that every major company does. They all have PACs. They all give to make sure that politicians vote in their favor. And, you know, for Major League Baseball, it's making sure that there are politicians who support their continued antitrust exemption and their continued suppression of minor league wages, which is most likely, you know, eventually going to include a suppression of a minor league union. Because there's, I read at least a month ago that, there's a local, and I don't remember which one, but one of the locals, I think it might be Steelworkers, are getting an insane amount of calls from minor league baseball players about joining because they don't have a union. They're trying to find one to join. That's encouraging, but it's in Major League Baseball's best interest that they don't organize and they don't get paid more. You know, it's in Minor League Baseball's best interest too. Right. So, you know, Democrats, Republicans, the ones you like, the ones you hate. I mean, Chuck Schumer is a terrible, terrible politician.
Oh, yeah. I didn't say his name because he's...
Oh, no. I'm just... And you said his name and I thought, oh, good. A chance for me to shit on Chuck Schumer because he's fucking terrible. But, you know, at the people that you like, that you hate, your senator probably gets money from someone. And, I think that the issue here, part of it is that MLB's lobbyist, according to Rob Manfred, had no idea about the comments. He must have been living under a rock, which, mm-hmm. Sure, that's fine. I mean, they're either protecting him or he's literally as dumb as a doorknob. Either way, not great for them, because that's kind of what caused this. Because there is a way for this to be completely avoided and for no one to think about this, you know. And in the end, it's going to cause them like maybe 3 weeks of bad press, and then everyone will forget and they'll be able to continue to donate, you know, as it goes. You know, I feel like people are sort of missing the point, because a lot of different companies asked for their donations back. And a lot of them had donated either before, both before and after.
Right. And that's all for their own optics. Like, all that is just to be like, oh, to be seen asking for the money back because something has gone viral that they have determined is detrimental to their earnings. Not because they suddenly were like, oh my God, we can't be ethically associated with... No, they don't care about that.
No. Companies, corporations don't have morals. They're not, no matter what the Supreme Court says, they're not people. They don't have morals. As long as the company is trying to make money, like MLB, they have no morals. Forget whatever, who was it? Joe Kennedy, about moral capitalism. There is no such thing. So I just want everyone to remember that whatever MLB does, it is not because it is actually, you know, they believe it's, you know, they've had a change of heart or they believe it's wrong or anything like that. It's because it is bad for them and their ability to make money. That's the only reason MLB does things.
Yes. And that's kind of the just imagine. I was trying to make it sound like imagine being any player in baseball and the league saying like, whoa, we just accidentally donated to this racist candidate because we thought we were just supporting her because she was suppressed. She would help us suppress, you know, minor league player wages like that. Well, we're perfectly innocent here. We're just trying to keep players at bay. We're not trying to be caught donating to a racist politician. So, I mean, there's no good spin on that, which makes sense why MLB would release such a, like a bland, such a bland statement in response to it. They're just like, oh, it was in connection to something and we've asked for it back. And the national writers who tweeted out that PR response without any sort of commentary on it were, part of the problem. Like that was just, they were just helping it kind of like pass along, like run over that speed bump. And this whole thing, it's made it clear that baseball, like you said, is no different from any of our other escapes. It's intrinsically intertwined with all of the politics people claim they're running away from by tuning in. And for everything you enjoy, there's a significant chance that there's this room full of mostly old white men at the top of it who believe that they can get away with anything. Like you said, like they were living under a rock because they can live under a rock. They can, they think they can get away with anything or care so little about other people that they haven't realized that they're getting away with something. And fans and writers and broadcasters, you know, they don't put politics in sports. Politics are a part of sports in the same way that legs are a part of a table. You can ignore them if you want, but they're usually what's propping it up.
The only time people mention politics in sports is when they start to see that it no longer aligns with their interests and their beliefs. That's why everyone, you know, every idiot you know got so snitty and stupid about Kaepernick kneeling, which we don't have to get into, but it's because they started to see that football and the people who play football, their political beliefs don't align with theirs. And that's fine unless they have to see it, unless they have to see it and recognize it, you know, because they have no problems with the flag being draped all over the field and there being a lot of, you know, military veteran stuff. Make no mistake, that's all political. It's all political, just in the guise of patriotism. It's all politics. And, you know, the only time people start to get annoyed is when it starts to not align with their beliefs. And that, I understand it. I hate it. But I actually feel like I'm letting you down a little bit with my anger. I have a lot more anger about other things. Like about this, I have, it's just so, my anger is mostly at the incompetence because oversight for lobbyists is not uncommon. I mean, lack of oversight. Like they're usually pretty independent, you know, lobbyists in general. They have been, you know, given the ability to, you know, to make donations on MLB's behalf and they're trusted with that ability. And so, you know, it's just incompetence that I'm mostly annoyed at because this could have been really just a blip for MLB. I mean, I'm glad it's not, but the issue is that nothing's really going to change. Maybe they'll stop giving donations to people who say stupid, you know, stupid things, or they'll ask for their money back sooner, but it changes nothing. MLB's still going to give money to politicians to help promote their interests, as will every other company everywhere. And so I have a tough time getting super annoyed. You know, I mostly just get annoyed at people who don't know how to do their jobs right. Like, man, this didn't have to be a thing, and now it's a thing, and it's on whoever this idiot lobbyist is who is presumably now back hiding under his rock hoping nobody notices it was him.
And before we move on to the next thing we want to talk about, I did want to just real quick, we keep saying this is something that's been going on and could have been just a blip because of how long it's been going on. MLB's, the Office of the Commissioner of Major League Baseball's PAC, was started in 2002, so baseball can support politicians who support causes that align with their interests. In the last 17 years, Major League Baseball has donated $3.7 million to 321 members of Congress. And to go back to Jeff Passan, he wrote on this topic, and I'll just read word for word, quote, on March 22nd, the strategy paid back manifold, the strategy of giving to politicians that align with them. Late that night, Congress tucked a two-paragraph provision, laughably called Save America's Pastime Act, into the 1,967th page of its $1.3 billion spending bill. 2 years earlier, a bill by the same name had been scuttled after outcry over its intent to make law the cartoonish underpayment of minor league baseball players prompted one of its co-sponsors to almost immediately wash her hands of it. Now, all those donations and the millions more the league spent lobbying were making for a handsome return on investment. The lawsuit seeking fair wages for minor league players was now running up against codified law. So that was a fun little strategic move that made any sort of complaints against what they were doing being a complaint against something that was now closer to being etched into stone. So that is one of the issues that surfaced early this week. And yeah, it was kind of like reprehensible up and down. But we had to clear the outrage spectrum to move on to the next issue that came up, which is, well, first of all, let's real quick before we move into that, I wanted to as a quick intermission here. Obviously, this brought up a conversation about players' rights and players and a potential strike in the next few years based on baseball's ongoing tradition of trying to suppress players. So given as brazenly and blindly as MLB has been spending money to suppress players' interests, what did you think, Liz, of the move announced Wednesday that Tony Clark was extended to be as the Major League Baseball Players Association's executive director through 2022? Do you think they're in good hands with Tony Clark at the head?
We'll find out, won't we? The biggest difference between Tony Clark now and Tony Clark a year ago is that in that time he's hired an actual labor lawyer, like an actual honest to goodness labor lawyer whose name is now escaping me, and I'll look it up. But that might have made everyone more comfortable. But players were, you know, for leading into the, you know, the negotiations, and even for a short period afterwards, they were happy with Tony Clark. He fought for the things that they wanted. They wanted things like, you know, better, you know, they wanted more food availability, I think, you know, better nutrition, you know, I think more per diems, more seats on buses or tickets, or, you know, little things that actually affect their lives, which I get, you know, and he fought for those things. Tony Clark is a former player would you know, that's his thing. He's a former player, and, you know, the players feel like he's promoting their best interests, which is great. But that's not the point of a union. The point of a union is to protect the rights of everyone, all players, not just at this moment, but in the future. The point of a union is to protect everyone. And Tony Clark did a real shitty job of that in the last CBA. You know, the owners got a lot of what they wanted, and the PA focused on preventing an international draft, which I think was the right thing to do. But they all, you know, in sacrificing that, they also allowed the owners to, you know, have more control on international prospects, which is why we saw what happened with Shohei Ohtani, why he's getting paid like a regular minor leaguer, despite not even a regular minor leaguer, one that's up in the majors. So he's getting paid about $560,000 a year, which is not nothing. But compared to what he should be making for the value he's giving the Angels, that was the point of that provision of the CBA. It was to stifle the value of players when they come over. And so, I mean, the players' union's got to get their shit together. You know, I think looking at the offseason so far, I think the owners have realized, hey, it looked a whole lot like we were colluding last year. Maybe we should try not to do that again.
Which is, by what you mean, let's not do again the how easily it looked like we were colluding, not let's not collude again.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, whether it's actual collusion, I believe, is still up in the air. I think it's probably, you know, like a silent stated thing, you know, that everyone has sort of reached the same conclusion at the same time. But it's also a shitty conclusion that, oh, you know, if someone is over 30, we should not do not want to and don't feel like we have to pay them.
Right.
So that's a huge problem. Like, the biggest thing for the players union going forward next year is going to be next year, the year after, 2 years, gosh, the CBA is still so far away, is going to be fixing service time, is going to be fixing the control issues, because a team gets a player's best years. And then they don't have to pay them, because at that point they're going to be close to 30, you know, depending on when they were drafted, when they were promoted. And, you know, it has to be fixed, because I don't see the market changing. Like, we're seeing deals now, and I think mostly the effort is to make it look like everyone's doing stuff and paying people, when I believe when we look on it at the end of the offseason, we're going to see that the contracts are just as small. People were just willing to give them out earlier, which is not a win for anyone. It is not a win for anyone. And, like, Clark needs to be ready to go to the mattresses, man. He's got to be ready. Him and his new lawyer have to be ready to tell the players, I'm so glad that, you know, I get that you guys want more tickets or better buses or whatever it is you want, but that's not imp- that's not important enough. That is not the point of a CBA. That's not the point of what we're doing right now. What we're doing right now is try to make sure that the people, you know, the players that come behind you get paid. The players in the minors who are going to come up are going to get paid. You know, you got like the players have a responsibility to themselves, but they also have a responsibility to the players behind them. Like, it's baffling to me that no one's looking at the bigger picture about the health of baseball and saying we really have to get serious about holding the owner's feet to the fire. Because, again, I'll remind everyone, we have no idea what any Major League Baseball team brings in profits, because teams do not open up their books for anyone but Major League Baseball. And even then, I believe it's usually a fight. And so anyone who says my team cannot afford this is talking without knowing, because we have no idea what teams can afford. And players, I think, acted like things were just going to stay the same when owners had started to realize, oh, we could just get away with not paying anybody over 30. And no one's going to question us because we have indoctrinated all of our fans to believe that the only that a player is only valuable if they're under 30 and, you know, before they've signed a contract, because signing a contract is evil and greedy.
Right. And that's the part that's always confusing to me, as has been cited many times over the years, that people sort of align with the team, which is the same thing. It's aligning with the owners and then joining in the narrative that a player is greedy or that a player scorned them just because he was operating in his best interest. And like, I get it. Like, it's fun to be like, oh, Cliff Lee left so much money on the table to come to Philadelphia over New York. But like, when we're talking about players getting what they deserve, why would you be against, like, the players are the part of baseball that fans attach to the most, obviously. You don't care about the owners. Like, a lot of fans probably couldn't tell you who the owners are, especially in the case of there being, like, 30 of them or something. And that's fine. You want to talk about, you know, people who don't care about you. The billionaires who own the baseball team don't care about you. They care about where you're spending your money and if it's being channeled into their organization. So to vilify players for like trying to operate in their best interests or organize or go on strike, you know, form a labor stoppage because they're not getting what they deserve. Obviously, if it's a difference between baseball and no baseball, you can understand why people would get angry at players for that. But I mean, if you look at it from a professional standpoint, it's just like, why would you ever side with the owners? They don't care. They care about nothing but themselves. They care about nothing but their bottom line. And again, this is all stuff that we know. We just, you know, don't talk about it. But when you're given a reason to, then it's just like, yes, let's go back to remind ourselves that this is pretty much how this operates. And it's...
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, Tony Clark, this is not something that he'll say to anybody, but he needs to remember and remind the players, when you're on the field, you're playing for your team. When you're off the field, you and the front office and owners are on different teams. You are not, you know, your goal is to win and their goal is to want you to win. And they want to put together the best team to win and make money. And you want to win so you can make money. In that sense, they're all on the same side. But when it comes to actually being paid, they're not on the same side. Owners and players want to get paid. They're the ones putting the product out there for you. They are the product. They're what you're paying to see.
Well, I was just gonna say, and if they are paying you what you think you deserve, then it's only because they think that paying you that much will lead to them being paid more.
Exactly. And that's fine. The issue is that they want to pay players less than they deserve, which is a funny word, but less than their value, their true value, their overall value, because it's profitable to them. And just remember, the owners and the players are on different sides. They're on different sides the moment they get off the field. Because the moment they get off the field, the front office wants to pay the player, you know, usually, you know, they want to get the best deal they can. And I'm not saying I don't understand that. You know, because I'm a person who enjoys coupons and deals. You know, we all do. But this is different. These are human beings and they're getting paid for doing a job that's hard. Everyone says it looks easy, but this is not, you know, they're on the road for 6 to 8 months out of the year, you know, and yes, it's what they sign up for, but they also sign up for their bodies breaking down, for seeing their families very rarely, for, you know, being lonely, for having to do stuff that is unpleasant and unfun sometimes, like we all do, but it's their job to go to the workout room and to be in the best physical shape and to try and hit a tiny little ball all the time. Like, being a baseball player is not an easy life. And they go through a lot, and their talent is out there for teams to pay for. And it bothers me that teams are so... There's no award for winning by spending the least amount of money. There's no award for that. You don't get extra brownie points. You don't get a bonus. You know, you don't get a special round of applause. There is only one award for winning, and it's called the World Series trophy. That is the only thing that you get for winning, no matter how you went about it. The Red Sox spent money to win. They spent years developing prospects. They went through a fallow period, just as many teams do. But they spent money to get where they are. You know, they look for deals like anyone else, but they weren't shy about saying, yeah, we spent some money to put this team together, which they did. Why is that so bad? Why is that the worst thing? Like, I'm getting the feeling right now from the Phillies front office, like, Middleton is out there saying, we're going to spend some money. We're going to do it. And, you know, McPhail and Klentak are still saying, you know, we want the, you know, are they're not saying anything, but you get the feeling that they're not fond of that. Like, your boss pretty much just told you in the press to spend some money, do it before he tells you to on penalty of losing your job. Just spend the money. There's no gold star. There's no gold star for being the most economical. Just spend the damn money. I don't get it.
You have the most money and the most willingness to spend that money. What is between you and giving someone a cartoonish amount of money? Like, oh, well, the Yankees are offering me this. Cool, here's this. What's next? What's the next thing? Like, yeah, does it need to be a higher number? Like, obviously there's a limit, but like, we're not at the point where we're talking about limits yet because the Phillies haven't signed anyone yet. So that's what's made this offseason so kind of hilarious, because the owner is just not holding back, going off on how much money he wants to spend and really riling fans up and getting everybody all lathered up for at least one superstar, followed by several other big signings to come to Philadelphia. And why I guess it's kind of funny because the reaction's been people writing and saying like, oh, well, the Phillies don't have to sign both Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, or they shouldn't sign both Bryce Harper for this reason. Oh, if they sign both of them, they can't sign anyone else. Or, oh, they're going to now sign other people first before they sign them, which is wild. It's like, again, I feel like I've said this on a couple of podcasts now. Either I am misunderstanding what people talk about when they talk about how much money the Phillies have, which is a ton, or other people are just not, they haven't been talking about that for a couple of years now, because it's my understanding that none of this, all of these columns and blogs written in reaction to what the Phillies have or haven't done so far, have been about saving money, which is something that my understanding is that's not what they need to do, or something they have to do, or want to do.
Or something the owner wants them to do.
Right.
God, get on board, McPhail and Klentak. Like, I get that they feel like it's – I feel like they're still really concerned with optics for some reason. I mean, and I, you know, every team should be concerned with blah, blah, blah. But it's like they're worried that spending a lot of money is going to make people think they're bad at their jobs.
Maybe.
Like, they can't sign a good player for no money. Like, no, good players are expensive. You sign them to win games, and then you do it, and then you start to win the games.
And
like, John Middleton wants the stadium to be filled. They're not going to do that with crap on the field. They put together maybe not the best team they could this year, but they put together the most attractive team that they had in at least 5 years, if not 6 or 7. And it was tough getting people there because they're just, it's not everything you need.
Right. And
You sign the good players and people, you sign Bryce Harper, you're going to get a sellout a lot. You sign both Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, that's a full stadium a lot of the time, yeah. Because everyone is like, oh, the Phillies are serious about winning again and they might actually do it. Right.
And people know, like the last time the Phillies did something, with the last time they had a rotation, that rotation in 2011, they managed to stick that, keep that rotation together for part of one season. People will want to get down there to see part of the Bryce Harper, Manny Machado era, when both guys are playing at the level that they've been signed to play at and like still in their prime and helping the Phillies win games. And you know what? Every signing is a gamble. You sign, the reason Harper and Machado are so valuable is because they're less of a gamble because of how good they've been for so long. You pay more for that gamble, but the idea is that it's got such a astronomically larger chance of paying off than being, you know, doing the standard small market, oh, lottery ticket, take a flyer on this guy, take this guy who's coming back from surgery, this guy who's, you know, maybe this change of scenery will help him have a bounce back year. Those things, like, that's not what the Phillies have to do now. They can gamble, quote unquote, on these mega star players who are much less of a gamble than anybody. So, you know, they'll make the Phillies money. That's not going to be an issue. Like, imagine if Bryce Harper and Manny Machado come to Philadelphia and both of them have like terrible first months of April, the Phillies will sell out every home game in April. Like, regardless, they'll do that. People will want to see them. People will want to see them when they start heating up. They'll have people buying up season tickets at a much more higher rate than the past couple of years. I mean, it would do exactly what John Middleton wants it to do. So I'm sure once the actual meetings take place and that all happens, I mean, people, I'm glad, you know what? I'm glad I haven't seen so many like, why aren't the Phillies doing anything? Cause the Braves have done a couple of things. Rumors that the Mets are doing a big thing right now. The Phillies are, you know, it's airtight. Nothing is happening and no word is coming out of the Phillies organization right now.
Which is how it's been since McPhail and Klentak came aboard. Nothing there. It is locked up tight. Nothing comes out till they're ready. And so be prepared to hear nothing until a deal is pretty much ready. I feel like with Corbin, we got lucky because, you know, it leaked out not through the Phillies at all. Just sort of a related thing that Corbin was there. And it was ended up being confirmed. Like, man, the reporters were on that. They're like, oh, God, look, a lead.
Somebody's
chase.
Driving by on 95 like, and took a picture of the Jumbotron. And that's how that news broke.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they're you can tell that they're getting a little punchy because I can't imagine how hard it is when there are no. And look at me talking fondly about the Phillies core beat writers. But I can't imagine how tough it is when your job is to cover the Phillies beat and there's nothing, not even anything happening, but nothing's coming out of the front office from anyone. And so you're just like, well, I guess, you know, John Heyman probably made up a rumor the last time he was smoking a cigar on the John. Maybe I'll chase that one down. So like, I feel badly, but I mean, the Phillies obviously don't want anything coming out, you know, regardless of whether or not, you know, things leaking is a way to build interest among the fans. Whatever. That's not their concern, well, sure. Yeah. Oh my God, Phillies, do something. The winter meetings are so close. We're just, they're
we'll
like
get
a week
there.
Away.
We'll get there. And I do think that if the Mets pull off this trade, this pretty big trade with the Mariners, that we will start seeing little peaks of when are the Phillies going to do something, which, you know, at this point, understandable.
Because now they have to. Like the Nationals are already fine, but they're probably going to sign someone else. If not, they already offered Harper a contract. I mean, maybe they'll offer him something else, but I feel like, you know, everyone is saying like, he'll go back to the Nationals. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where are you getting that from? They already offered him a contract that he turned down straight up. So, I mean, but with, you know, if Cano and Diaz, I don't know how to say his last name. I'm sorry. But if they come to the Mets, the Phillies have to get better fast because the Mets are then, you know, the Mets are better. Like the Phillies will then be fourth place right above the Marlins for how good is this team. Yeah. In the NL East. Like they have to, they don't have a choice but to sign right. either one or both. Otherwise the team's just not going to be good enough to compete. And that's not acceptable anymore. We could finally say it. If this team isn't competitive next year, it's an absolute 100% failure, because it's expected now. We're out of rebuild. It's time to actually put together the team on the field that you want to win something. So just fucking do it. God.
Do what I want starting now immediately. That's kind of the philosophy. Come on.
Yes.
Damn it. Well, anyway, as we've said, almost like I purposely used the word gambling a moment ago to describe signing players to provide
already screaming about this.
A segue to our next topic, which is, of course, gambling in baseball. So the money quote from this story, which is about baseball. What the hell is this about? What is this, a partnership with a casino, with the casino?
Yes, it's a partnership with MGM. Yes.
So Major League Baseball's yes. partnership with MGM casinos, about which Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, remember, said that the slow pace of baseball, quote, gives an opportunity to be creative with respect to the types of wages. Now, Liz, if you're familiar with the words Rob Manfred and pace of play being so close together, you may remember that this sort of flies in the face to me of Rob Manfred's entire crusade to speed up baseball. The entire time he's been in office, it's kind of been his like main thing. We have clocks. We have limits on mound visits. We have experiments in the Arizona Fall League in which players are placed on second base in the bottom of the ninth inning, I think, or of a tie game, something like that, just to speed the game up. All of which was the idea to make it more appealing to younger audiences, because I think the median age of baseball fans was listed as like 56 at some point in the recent past. So they're trying to get younger yep. people in. And Rob Manfred's plan was, we got to make this game faster. That'll make it sexier. That'll make it more viral. We'll have a lot more video clips for teens to share with their teen friends. But none of it really changed anything. You could probably point to some statistics that showed there was some sort of difference. But did you sense a real seismic change in baseball after all the efforts Rob Manfred put into pace of play in the past season or two?
Yeah. No. Last season, the only thing he did was a limit on mound visits, which I believed was not really an effort to to speed up the game in general. I believe it was in direct response to the 2017 World Series. It was, you know, because that's the last thing everyone sees. And it was mound visit every other freaking pitch. It took forever. And I mean, I get that. Limiting mound visits, whatever. I didn't. You know, maybe at the time I felt strongly about it, but I don't now. That was sort of a compromise, because just less than a year ago, Manfred met with the Players Association because he has the ability granted to him in the CBA to propose and implement changes to the game. And he does not have to get the Players Association's approval. I think, wants it, but he doesn't have to get it. And when the PA saw that he wanted to implement a pitch clock, they freaked out, as is, you know, I get it. I don't think a pitch clock's a bad idea, but I get why they're scared of it. And the compromise was, this year he would do it during this off season for the 2019 season. And last season, it would just be mound visits. He pretty much just said, we're going to do this next year. Let's see if he says anything about it ever again. I don't think he's ever going to say anything about it ever. Maybe he will, but I mean, he's like, we need to grow the game. And when he says we need to grow the game, what he means is we need fans to pay money to watch baseball on TV, to buy MLB TV, to buy merchandise, and to go see games in person. And you know, shockingly, you wave a little bit of scratch under his nose, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, what? I have no idea. Like, the money, if the money replaces, if the money replaces those fans, if the money, you know, that those fans would bring in is, you know, is replaced in this deal, then fine. It's just so, I mean, not shockingly disingenuous. This is Major League Baseball, you know? It's normally disingenuous of them to, you know, to do this. I just, you know, like, my biggest issue is the lack of honesty. Not even just being upfront, like, the only way that baseball continues to grow is, you know, that, you know, we still have the sport that we like, is if everyone is continuing to make the same amount of money that they are now, and then they get raises on top of that all the time. The only way that's going to happen is if more people like baseball, and we feel like not enough people are liking baseball right now.
Yeah.
And the ones that do are very
do you
old.
Think starting
so
a
it's, oh my God, it's so, my head fucking exploded. I almost died when I read that. I thought I was, I'm just like, did he really say
Do you
that?
Think starting a runner on second base had any chance of ever getting out of like a low level off-season winter league like it was experimented in? Do you think that was ever something that they took so seriously? Or was it just part of an overall facade that like, well, we need to look like we're doing something and we don't have any good ideas. So why don't we just do weird shit like this until something else happens? Because clearly they're not so into it that Rob Manfred won't very transparently totally go, like totally throw in on support of the slow pace of baseball to say, hey, it's good for this. We can all make fun wagers about what the next pitch is going to be or if a bird's going to land on the field. This is going to be wild. And somebody actually replied to me when I was sort of, you know, responding sarcastically to some news on Twitter, which I know it's mind blowing. But somebody said, I said something. Oh yeah, so this whole effort has been to get younger fans into the game. So now we're now we're celebrating this low pace of baseball, which was apparently a problem to get young fans in for the sake of gambling, which is something that only adults can legally do. And somebody pointed out, you know, that adults are 18 and older. So you can still, I think their point was, they didn't say this, but I think their point was you can still get young fans through gambling. I've kind of gone back and forth on this. How excited do you think, is there like a bunch of 18-year-olds out there who are not baseball fans who will become baseball fans because of this? Like, am I ignorant for not knowing that? Yes, there is. Because to me, it seems, no, there's not.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are people out there who want to, you know, who will bet on sports and they'll look at baseball and they're like, wow, this could be a thing because there are so many different things I could bet on. And then they become fans by magic or something, which is, you know, sure, that's absolutely a possibility. But this is about money. This is about money. It's all about money. The only thing they wanted was money. You know, money is what will grow the game, in that that was the only purpose of growing the game, was to make the same amount of money that we're making now, only more.
Right. And that's what it is. And that's kind of what I think the point I land on is that this isn't about fans. This isn't about the commissioner's office being like, we want to make this game more appealing to more people. It's not about that. It is, like I said at the top of the show, it is just another very direct window into the idea that this whole thing operates by a bunch of people who don't give a shit about anyone but themselves and are here to make the most money possible. And they don't care whose hand or head or neck they step on to do so. And this wasn't like the most sinister thing baseball has ever done, but it's certainly stupid and transparently contradicting what Rob Manfred has been like crusading for the past couple of seasons. And it's
the only thing he's wanted.
Yes. And
it is for the past two off seasons, that has, if not more, that has been his main thing.
So we're reaching the end of the show here, and I wanted to end on a slightly more positive note, just by saying that, like, this, it sucks when we have to think about baseball in this terms, but it's important that when the opportunity comes that we do, that we point out stuff like this. And I don't mean you and I mean everyone in general, because it's important to remember that this exists, and that if we want things to change, there's things, you know, there's support you can lend to different aspects of baseball or to different movements or to whatever. If this is something that you believe in, then you can work to make the system less, you can be less cynical about it. However, if what you love is baseball, this doesn't have to be, this isn't real baseball. We get so few moments of like genuine, you don't have to pull back any layers and think like, okay, well, why did this guy do this? Whether that person is a player or a coach or an owner or anybody. But I would just suggest that if you're trying to enjoy baseball and stuff like this makes it more difficult, you burrow into the real moments that have no choice but to be genuine. You just take moments like Mike Trout playing catch with a kid in the stands, or Adrian Beltre and Elvis Andrus, clips of them fucking around on the field. The video that Ryan Howard tweeted out today of him celebrating Jimmy Rollins' birthday, of him and Jimmy Rollins doing a rapping remix of Take Me Out.
Quote unquote.
You know, like the very famous GIF that obviously has sad context to it now, but the very famous GIF of Jose Fernandez catching the line drive from Troy Tulowitzki and both of them like laughing about it because it was so ridiculous how he caught the ball. Like just human moments like that are like that's baseball. Like the players on the field wearing the uniforms, the ones that connect to the fans or that fans form connections with, that's baseball. If you're a fan and you find yourself mired and just weighed down by all the cynical components to the fact that baseball will forever be a corporation that intends to do nothing but make money and all of its actions will be some form of disingenuous, because at the end of the day, that's where its motivations lie. Just remember, there will be moments like that to celebrate, and that the version of baseball that baseball tries to conjure to get you to spend your money does actually exist. And you don't have to live in a world where it's just a bunch of faceless billionaires trying to get all the money out of your savings account. So I wanted to
add can I add a little bit more?
Yeah, of course.
If living in the world of today is kind of getting you down, I spent a little bit of time earlier this week watching the first episode, and I'm about to hit the second episode of the Ken Burns baseball documentary. The best episodes are the first three, maybe the fourth. You don't really need to watch after those because I love the history he gives of the game. It's not, you know, as with every Ken Burns documentary, it's from a point of view. It's not, you know, it can be argued with, just like the Civil War documentary has some significant issues, as does the baseball one. But I love revisiting that time in baseball when it was very new and just getting started, and it was crazy and weird, and there were still these capitalist structures around it, but it was very different. Watch that. It's streaming on Amazon Prime. You read The Glory of Their Times, which I've talked about a few times. It is, I think, probably the best baseball book I've ever read, because it's literally just the words of some old ass baseball players. And find ways to connect with the game that remind you why you love it, that help you learn more about it. Try to do those things. And I also wanted to say, Justin and I are thinking about doing some baseball pop culture review type things. We might test it out on here, but it's most likely going to end up behind our Patreon wall on the $5 tier. If you have any thoughts on what you'd like us to talk about, any movies, bad or good, however, we would love to do some bad ones, books, TV shows, TV episodes, if there's anything out there that you'd like to hear us talk about, doesn't have to be Phillies related, let us know, tweet at us, tweet at The Good Fight, and we'll find it. So those are some things to look forward to.
Yes, we will. We are very much looking forward to. I will exclusively be marketing in bad movies, and trust me, there are many. I don't see a particular reason to go through all of the baseball movies that pop into people's mind when you say baseball movies. I want to find ones that are not like sequels to The Sandlot. There are two sequels to The Sandlot. I would love to go through those and just see what's canon in The Sandlot timeline that we're not aware of.
So, we're going to do some baseball romance novels too, which are my favorite.
Get sexy with baseball. And we've got a long off season to do so.
I'm so excited, Justin. I'm so excited for you to read these. They are, I mean, listen, some of them are good. Some of them are cringeworthy. And I can't wait to, my favorite thing in these books is the baseball universe that they create. because they have to have a foundation for, you know, if it's a baseball romance novel, there has to be a player. He has to be on a team. The team has to play other teams, and they have to be playing for something. And it can't always be Major League Baseball, World Series teams that you know. So they make up other teams. They have players doing things that players wouldn't do. It's like an extra awesome bonus part of these romance novels that I'm gonna nitpick apart all of the baseball stuff that the person writing it might not actually care about at all.
Yes. No, I mean, we are very worked up about this. So we hope you join us for that and for our next episode of Continued Success next week, as well as a new episode of The Dirty Inning, which will take place next week as well. Dr. Trevor Strunk and I will be going over Bryce Harper and Manny Machado's best innings against the Phillies, the team that hopefully at least one, if not both of them, are playing for.
Oh, I know there's some good Bryce Harper ones.
There's some brutal moments, yeah. And as always, hitting season as well. Liz and I will both appear on that, obviously, this coming Sunday, as we always do with John Stolness. And he'll have another episode next week on Thursday by himself when he talks to Phillies insiders and gives you a stat of the week. So stay tuned to all of the podcasts that are part of the Good Fight Network. We enjoy bringing you baseball coverage all winter long, as much as you will. As long as you can stand it, we'll keep going. So we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.